This is so stupid.
Hey guys, what's up? We're back for another episode of Tori's Stupid Podcast. This week we've got Matt Lopes on the pod. He's a comedian, podcaster, content creator. He's got over 1 million followers on TikTok, which is pretty incredible. I met him 2 years ago at the Stress Factory. I was featuring for Troy and he was our host. He was getting a start there. He's from the area, he's from Connecticut, but he's all over now. He's touring with Corey B. He also has a podcast with Corey B and Marcus Monroe called Boyfriends. Just did their show last Wednesday. A lot of fun. It's every Wednesday, Upper West Side, at the New York Comedy Club there. So check it out. And yeah, it's going to be a fun episode. I'm pumped to have him on. So enjoy this episode.
I'm afraid of like sitting down and putting on like Eddie Murphy's Raw and just not understanding it because I'm afraid of like if they're doing anything that was like current at the time.
Right.
I'm going to feel dumb as fuck because I don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
You could have doubled down to have been like, it's like Freaky Friday. It's like, yeah, that was an original movie, but I'm not going to watch it without Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lindsay Lohan.
100%.
I'm going to waste my time with an original.
I do the same thing where I tell people that I've never watched a movie that came out before the year 1995.
Really?
Except for Jurassic Park. Uh-huh. And that's true. I haven't. So like, and then everybody gets mad. They're like, oh, so no Godfather, no like whatever, Jumanji, whatever they think their favorite movie is from like back Scarface. And I'm like, no, I would never watch those because it looked shitty. It looks so shitty. It
looks bad.
It's grainy as fuck.
Like, black and white movies? Why would I waste my time?
Fuck that. I would never do that. And I tell people that. Watching them get so upset is very funny to me. And then over time, I've just like, when I've backed into a corner and I have to think up of a reason that I don't actually agree with, but just to like kind of stand my ground, I've been like, well, it's also like you see all these other movies that come out and all these directors are inspired by those old directors. So it's kind of like seeing it. Like High School Musical is Breakfast Club. Just saying that and watching people get so upset is very fun for me.
That's amazing. I used to always say I'm not going to watch a black and white movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm lying.
Have you
that.
Ever though or no?
I have, but I hate it. Like white or what's that Christmas movie? White Christmas?
Okay.
Fuck that.
Bad movie.
I mean, I'm not going to, I just, I'm bummed out. This makes me sad. They're all dead.
It's
I'm watching
so
a bunch
hard.
Of dead people.
Yeah.
I'm sad that they're dead.
Yeah.
Now I'm faced with my own mortality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, they wasted all this time being good actors and then they die.
I don't think about death.
Yeah, boo.
Trying to watch a movie, trying to be entertained.
Exactly. And like Judy Garland, she's on drugs the whole time. She didn't even want to be there.
Oh my God.
It's sad.
But it's also like, you need something to keep your eyes, your stimuli.
Yeah, stimuli.
You know, you need I need to be stimulized.
Totally.
So fucking put some color before me.
Yeah.
And I fall for all that shit. All that like those tactics to keep people invested. Like,
well, it's like when you watch a podcast, like I edit this only so that someone watches it. Like I could just upload the file.
Yeah.
But I gotta zoom it, you know.
You
gotta
do
have
all
some
that
movement.
Shit. That's awesome.
It's not great.
How long does it take you?
An hour. But I'm
really?
I'm not
you
like
work fast as hell, huh?
Thank you. Well, I just use the cut tool. Cut and zoom, cut and zoom, cut and zoom.
Yeah.
I did once use the tool where you make two frames and then you switch between the two.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I forgot how to do it. And I forgot. And so I was like, you know what? We're going to stick with what we know here. Mm-hmm. And that is the cut tool and the zoom tool.
Yeah,
we're good there.
Good.
But that's all stupid. But anyways, Matt Lopes.
Hi guys, I'm here. We got the pink headphones on. We're having a good time.
We're having a good time.
Tori's hallway smells really good. It smells like some kind of dessert down there.
That someone made fish last week, so that was upsetting.
Oh no.
It was I was like, it almost was a hate crime smell. Like it wasn't like someone cooked fish. It was like someone got cheated on and the girl showed up and put a fish under the stairwell level bad.
So the hallway smelled bad.
And
just
like,
the purpose of
making
the place smell bad.
I was like, good move, girl. But now I'm suffering.
Me.
But I'm like, I'm gonna get someone back with this tactic.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
Holy
but,
shit.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. That was good. Yeah. Hallway smells good.
Good start.
A good, very good start. It was a really good first impression.
Thank God.
Their place looks really nice.
Thank you so much.
Nice
spot. You know, for the Lower East Side, it works.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I shouldn't say that, but whatever.
Your location?
You can't find me.
Yeah,
if you listen and you want to find me.
It's honestly
it's
crazy.
It's a fairly big neighborhood.
I'll say this. I text you. I was like, how do I get inside? And then there was like this iPad by your door.
Yeah, you can't get past that.
You can't get past it. There literally is a button that says directory, and I scrolled till I found your name, and I called this place.
Oh yeah.
I could see everybody's names that live
oh,
in this
really?
Building. That's crazy shit.
That is kind of crazy.
That's
shit.
That's nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
good to know. I am not safe
name,
here.
But I was like, oh shit.
It didn't say my full name?
I was like, yeah, but that's dangerous. It didn't say your full name.
Only first name's on there?
Tori C.
Okay.
I was like, if someone's, someone knows you're in the Lower East Side and they just go around.
Every door. Every iPad you find is glued to a wall. Start scrolling. Anyways.
You start getting ringing doorbells.
Sometimes it does ring at odd hours and it spooks me.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, you know. Whatever. I live with many people, so.
Yeah.
There's like 40 really, people in here with.
A lot of tough people.
With knives. Yeah.
Knives.
Yeah, a lot of knives and.
Crossbows,
you know.
Even.
Exactly.
You better not fucking come to this
place. No, you won't make it far at all. Anyways, I love that you're here. Matt and I met 2 years ago now.
Oh, really?
At Stress Factory.
I don't know how we met. Is that how we met?
Yeah, you were hosting. We were at Bridgeport Stress Factory, and I believe you were our host.
Were you were opening for Troy?
Yeah.
Sick.
I'm pretty sure that was
then
it.
Hell yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's probably how.
And then our paths just keep crossing. You mm-hmm. were at the Stress Factory this summer or May.
Yeah, yeah.
You did time, but you
the
weren't.
New Jersey one. Yeah.
You weren't. Yeah, you just did a spot, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You happened to be there, or Troy hit you up?
I don't know how it worked. I think I was in, I was around town. And
yeah.
And you guys were nice enough to be like, oh shit, come over.
Troy's nice about sharing his stages.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
It was very cool. It was a really good time.
Yeah.
No, but I love, because I go and I, now that I'm touring with Corey, I see a bunch of people that like just work at those clubs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, you're such a cool person, but I don't ever see them again. So I'm very happy that in my instance, I was like, yeah, I worked in the clubs, but also like I'm like moving up and like,
mm-hmm.
crossing paths with these people again that I meet at these clubs.
Oh.
You know?
How so? Like when you tour multiple times or like you're...
Yeah. Sometimes like you come to Stress Factory when you first met me. I was mm-hmm. probably like the receptionist.
You right? were... I worked at the door at Broadway. So I always yeah, like real yeah. knows real because it's like, you know, it's just a hustle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but like, I don't know. I'll be in... Like we were just in...
Appleton?
Wisconsin. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like those people who work there are fucking sick and they're funny as hell yeah. even. But it's just like... They're not in the city, so it's like, oh, I'm never gonna see those guys again unless I go back to Appleton. It mm-hmm. seems. It seems.
It seems.
But it's cool for in my perspective, being in the Bridgeport Stress Factory, and starting as a receptionist, and then getting better as a comedian to where, Vinny also wanted to make me work at the New Jersey location, mm-hmm. and now that I'm. That I had those credits, I work more in the city, and then all these headliners remember me from Stress Factory, mm-hmm. and it's fucking sick.
No, that's awesome. I mean,
like that a lot.
I also agree with you with like these. This our world is so small, and mm-hmm. you will meet someone on the road, and you will think you're not gonna see them again, but then you do. Like Troy and I did Wise Guys in Vegas, mm-hmm. and our host Parker is now in the city.
Oh, sick!
And I saw him like 2 years later, and he was just sitting in the green room at Greenwich, and I was like, "What's up, Park?" He's like, "Yeah, I moved here because he was talking about
dope.
Moving here." And
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, "I was kind of like, okay, like we'll see it when we see it." And wow. then, sure enough, he's sitting in the hallway, basically.
Yeah,
and
see,
I was
that's
like,
the thing.
"That's great."
You meet so many people who are like, "I want to do that," mm-hmm. and then like, but you don't know. You don't know how
right.
you have to take it at face value or not, because even if they seem like they really mean it, it's just like life doesn't work out in the way where it's like, "Oh, you become financially stable
yeah.
to make that move." So.
Hard. It's honestly really hard here, and when people react the way they do to me living here, I'm always reminded of like how lucky am I, because
yeah,
yeah, when you're here, and I didn't even start in stand-up here. I just moved here to work in advertising,
mm-hmm.
and then I kind of found my way into stand-up, so it was like I kind of slipped and fell into it, so it wasn't
yeah.
like big city, big dreams, I'm gonna be a comedian. It was kind of like I'm already here and I love this thing and I'm gonna just keep doing it.
You were born in New York?
No, I was born in Maryland originally, but I've been here since 2016.
Born in Maryland, Baltimore, or what?
Yeah, pretty much Annapolis.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Have you gone back? Have you done like Magoobies and stuff?
I've done Magoobies with Troy twice.
That's mm-hmm. cool.
Really fun.
I love that raked.
I know.
The audience.
Yeah,
is like,
and he sold it out the first time we did it.
Yeah.
Which was scary for me because I was like, basically he had his hit big break
mm-hmm.
with the Kamala Harris video.
Yeah.
And then that was where we just started touring together, and I never knew if I was host or feature, or
mm-hmm.
both, or like a hybrid role.
Yeah.
So we'd walk into these clubs, and like I was still pretty green. I started in 2019, but obviously the pandemic took that time away from me. So then
yeah.
come 2021 is when I really started getting back into it, 22, and then 23 was when it all started happening. So I'm like...
Wait, so then why don't you just tell people that you started in 2021 when you like started to hang? Did you hit it hard in 2019?
No. That was when I started.
Do you feel like saying 2019 makes people feel like you've been in it longer so they have more respect for you?
Slightly, yeah.
Okay. I do the opposite thing.
Oh, really?
I tell them the moment I started taking it seriously.
Okay.
Because, like, I've done, like, one open mic back in, like, maybe 2017.
Okay.
Like, that's the first time I tried. I never touched it again.
Really?
And then I started after the pandemic. So, like, 2021, I think, is where I started.
So, you say 4 years?
I say 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, when people see how good you are, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I get both sides.
I do, too.
I get both sides. Because I can, for me, I'm like, oh, I would love for somebody to see how good I am and then ask how long I've been doing it and me be super impressive and say, oh, not even that long, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I just got in this shit.
And I'm crazy, would love that. Know? I think once they see that you're good,
yeah,
then that's a flex to say you're a short amount of time. But if they don't know
they
you.
They don't know you.
I say six because it gives me a little, like, credibility. And yeah. I do think my experience equates to that level of time because I've toured the whole country and I've been really fortunate.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like 4 years is kind of, and also if I met someone and they were like 4 years and I'd be like, all right, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
If they say six, you're like, okay, you've been around, you understand, you're sticking right. with it. So yeah, I don't know. I agree.
There is a bit of a jump. Something happens in that 2 years between four and six.
Well, I hear it takes 10 to really do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I believe we're like, all just in that experimental stage for sure.
Yeah.
But you can see it in some people's eyes when they're like, I'm not 4 years in, I'm 6 years in.
Yeah.
It's like, you just see, like, they think they're so much more seasoned and I'm like, all right, maybe there's, I hope that there's something in the next 2 years that really make me feel like I'm more of a comic than I am now.
I think, yeah, every year is big. I mean, I will say this year feels a little stagnant for me just because I wasn't touring as much. And I got really used to that back in 2023 when I kind of went everywhere with Troy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like a weird adjustment because I'm sure you feel this way a little bit when you're doing these bigger shows with bigger comedians. You get used to these big rooms and you're like, well, if I can make all these people laugh, I should have my own room that's filled like this. Yeah. And you have a big following. You've got 1.1 million on TikTok. You've got a big following on Instagram. I'm sure you feel that of like, I'm already making these rooms laugh. Why don't I have my own rooms?
Yeah, it's tough. It's very tough to be like, I feel like 500K on Instagram doesn't do anything as close to what it did 2 years ago.
I agree. It feels a little fluffy. And even with my like 12,000, I was lucky because when I look at those numbers, I'm like, what the fuck? But then I'm like, oh, these are people that I met in real life. Like, I got that following when I was touring.
Right.
So it's like, those were like one-on-one interactions. Like, so they're they're liking, they're engaging. Like, they're real people that I know weren't just like scrolling by, saw maybe two or three videos and was like, yeah, I'll throw her a follow and maybe I'll drop off eventually. 100%. So it's like, I feel like rooted in that following and I feel lucky to have that. But at the same time, it's like, I need 100 times that.
I know.
It's tough.
But at the same time, my following has... It's not built off stand-up clips.
Right, it's content.
It's content. And people love the content, and I get recognized a lot. Mm-hmm. But then when I'm like, oh, I'm doing a show, they don't really understand that it's a stand-up show. They don't get that I'm a comedian because I don't make content about it. I'll put out a stand-up clip like maybe once or twice a year. It's got to be way more than that.
Did you start in stand-up and then do content, or was it kind of a mixture of the two coming together?
I'd never done, like, right now I'm doing both at the same time, but I knew that if I wanted to get good at stand-up, I couldn't try to juggle both at first. So I was doing really bad on Vine when Vine came out.
Oh, I forgot about Vine.
Yeah, but I was on it posting all the time until the day it
started. So you were a Vine star?
No. Oh. Not at all.
Oh.
But I was active on it.
You know, so being bad for years. You learned the tricks of the trade of editing and like what works, what doesn't.
100%.
So yeah.
Being bad at it for a long ass time. So from the day it started to the day it ended, because I was so fascinated with that app.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time it ended, I only had 1,000 followers.
Okay.
But like I was on it all the time.
Honestly,
I was obsessed with it.
It's so funny though. It's like every step of the way, it's like you don't even realize what it's doing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm trying to always remember because... Every time I do anything, and like it either seems like it flops or whatever, you're kind of like, what am I doing? And then like a year later, you look back and you're like, well, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have gotten this. And that would have led me to this. Like, for example, working the door at Broadway made me meet Troy, which then ended me like up touring. And it's like, I was just an intern at one point seeing people working a door. And then it's like, oh, right. These things really add up. So you on Vine, it's like you learn how to cut and make it fast. And it's like your video content's amazing. And it's like, it's really impressive because it's like, I'm always struggling with content creation.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, I watch you and it's like, you pay a character, you make a 20-second video that's hilarious. And then it's done. And you're like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
But you have to grow that kind of brain
to
figure it out. But the only way you're going to do that is by being bad at it for a long time.
Yeah.
People don't understand that shit. And it's like, well, you're a stand-up comedian. You should understand when you were first starting off, you were fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Everybody was bad as fuck when they started. And but then it's like, they see me doing content and the content does well and they're like, oh, I can do that. And then they try and it doesn't go well. And I'm trying to tell them the reason it's not going well. And sometimes people don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, then maybe this is not end up gonna not being for you. You have to think about it as like, this is a process. The same with stand-up and shit. You're going to get better over time. So I was bad at Vine. So once Vine went away, though, I was waiting for a new kind of video app. I think I was on Instagram for a little bit, but then TikTok started coming around. I was in college. I really started finding my groove with my sense of humor more comedically. And TikTok was doing this cool thing where it's like trendy, like having trendy videos was such an easy way to get so many views. Mm-hmm. So I would just do my take on trends that were happening.
Yeah.
Or I'd either make fun of the trend or I would do it in my own, I don't know, mindset, whatever jokes I had about it. And that's a great way to automatically just get more people looking at your stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I would also mix in my own content on that app. And then people who are following me from the trends and from my, and that's how you grow that kind of following. But then I stopped. I stopped doing content when I got a job, when I got the job at Stress Factory.
Okay.
I was like, okay. I was just out of theater.
Theater.
I
graduated. I didn't know you did theater.
I was a theater major in college.
That all makes sense.
Yeah, being on stage was never my issue with comedy. Uh-huh. It's writing. It's always going to be writing. I know how to deliver a joke. I feel like I know. I have good stage presence. I think that's something that I started with.
Did you do theater in high school as well?
Yeah, a little bit. I was Sebastian in The Little Mermaid.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank God they didn't make me do blackface. I would have done it. I was very impressionable back then. If the director was like, do it,
I'll do anything.
Yeah, they made me do the Jamaican accent, and I killed it.
But I bet.
We can't tell anybody
about
it.
That's so funny.
I went to college, and like, college was my first like liberal experience.
Where'd you go?
I went to Southern Connecticut and like New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
So my first liberal experience, because I grew up in Shelton, which was very not liberal, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I didn't even know. I had no idea. So I was doing a Jamaican accent in high school, and then I'd go to college, and I'd be so proud to tell everybody when I got into that theater department, oh, look what I've done. I was in The Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, who were you? I was like, Sebastian, and I did a great Jamaican accent. And they were like, you can't tell anybody that. You shouldn't tell anybody that you've done that.
I feel like
yeah, yeah. Maybe nowadays, yeah. But when
it's
I got
black
to,
voice, it's Jamaican voice.
Yeah. It's totally it's a different. Crab voice.
Yeah, it's different.
It's lobster talk. You don't get it.
You don't get it.
I was texting my mom. I was like, "You have to get rid of all those videos on Facebook that you posted about me." And she's like, "No, those are memories." I was like, "Fuck."
Yeah. I think you're safe.
Ruining my
I think
life.
You're safe.
Now it's fine. Yeah, hell yeah. But so I graduated in theater. I was doing really good in auditions, but I felt really scared about it not being a safe way to live at the time. So I was still working in a deli at the time. I was like, let me figure out how to get into an industry, at least in Connecticut, that's entertainment related.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it is a full-time job, it feels kind of safe. And that's when I found receptionisting at Stress
Factory.
Okay,
amazing.
And
that was your full-time job.
Yeah, it became my full-time job, and that's when I started doing comedy. I didn't even start open mics.
Way.
They started putting me on stage as a host, and I was making a fool of my fucking self.
Were you trying to act?
No,
like,
no.
Let me do a voice for you guys.
I was doing jokes, but like I was reading them off a piece of paper, like literally doing some dumb open mic shit in front of paying audiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad.
Were headliners watching you, like, what's happening?
Yeah, horrible. Michael Rappaport would tell me, like, he would give me the hardest advice.
What was his advice?
He was like, get that. Like, at the time, it was harsh.
Right.
But I was like, I know, absolutely, I shouldn't be on stage with a piece of paper. He's like, get that fucking paper out of your fucking hand. I was like, okay, all right, man, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. So it was that, like, Ricky Velez fucking hated me.
No way.
Did not like me. I don't know him at all now, but
that's really funny.
But it makes sense. Like, you go to a place, you don't want the first person to fucking bomb. And when he does, like, that's upsetting for you because it hurts the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
So
were you nervous too?
No, there was no nerves.
That's amazing.
In my mind, I was like, I'm meant to do this. It's like that dumb fucking...
That early stages delusion. I had that
delusion.
As well.
It's
where
delusion.
You're like, I'm a natural.
Yeah, I'm meant to do this.
I was also wasted for all my first sets. Like, I used
really?
Alcohol as a huge crutch.
Really?
Yeah, always drunk.
And where did you start?
I took a class at the Comedy Cellar.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, my friend wanted to be her maid of honor, and I was like, I want to give a really good speech. So yeah. I took a class there with Rick Crom, and I just fell in love with it. I was like, this is incredible. I put my first ever like showcase show on Reddit, on like the stand-up page, because my friend did. Yeah. I didn't even know what Reddit was. She was like, I posted mine, you should post yours. And it made it like the top of the page. Everyone was commenting nice things, like, this is incredible.
Oh, cool.
So I said first ever set, so they weren't like expecting much, but they were like, this is great. So I had this like false sense of confidence to be like, all right, watch out, world.
Yeah.
And then I threw myself into the industry room, which is like red flag number one of like any, it's like the industry room is for someone that's doing stand-up that wants to get like stage time, that's like, this is my next move. I was like, let's fucking go. Like the mic, a cord fell out of the mic.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to fix it because I was so green.
Oh, shit.
I'm like up there just like screaming about AirPods. I'm like, why are there wires? Yeah. So bad.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic hit. So then I couldn't do any more stage time. But then Rick called me from the club and was like, hey, you still have spots from your audition if you want to come do them. And at the time I was with my grandmother in Florida. And I was like, I better get my ass back to New York and figure this shit out.
Oh, shit.
So then
Were you living in Florida for a bit?
I was just like a whirling dervish during the pandemic. I was just, I went to Colorado.
A whirling what?
A whirling dervish. I think that's an old person term. That's like an old reference.
What
it was in old movies. I think it's a term.
Is it a fish?
Whirling dervish. I'm going to Google that after the pod. That's a saying, okay?
First time I've ever heard it in my life. Whirling dervish?
Yes, whirling dervish. I'm not making this
sounds
up.
Like an actor from one of those black
I'm
and white
Google
movies.
This for us.
You ever seen one of those whirling dervish movies? The one where he's all
yeah,
silly.
It's the first thing that comes up when you type in whirling. A whirling dervish is a member of the Mevlevi order of Sufism. What the fuck? It's Islam. Interesting.
Oh.
So I don't know if it's like I can even Islamic say that
word.
Anymore.
That's sick.
I think that's really common.
Maybe you can. Who knows?
Well, I use the term cakewalk recently at work. I go, oh, it'll be a cakewalk. And I'm with my black coworker.
Yeah.
And I go, that's a funny saying. I wonder what cakewalk is. So I Google it sitting next to her. And I go, it was like, so they made the slaves like do this dance.
No.
And like the one that was the best got cake or something. I was like, as I was reading it, I was like, my voice just got quieter and quieter. And I was like, yeah, I was
the
like,
worst person to find out would cakewalk around.
Literally,
it's so funny.
I just was like, I'm not using that anymore.
Yeah.
I go, this will be really easy.
Holy
but
shit.
But now when my coworkers say cakewalk, I'm like,
you shouldn't.
Don't say that. That's like saying Indian
don't
style
say
when you sit down.
Yeah.
There's so much shit we can't say anymore. But yeah, cakewalk is racist.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
sorry, yes.
Whirling dervish. Oh, yeah, pandemic. I was just bopping all over the place.
So you were down in Florida with your grandma, and you came back up to New York, and you got into those spots.
And then I kind of, that's when I jumped right back into comedy. It was working, it was seating people, working the door. Then I started managing Greenwich. So I just kind of like got pushed right at, like back into it.
So good.
Yeah.
Good
so
shit.
It's important to work at a club.
I did Stress Factory for like a good 2 to 3 years, getting really good at like hosting and featuring.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vinny started wanting to push me and like towards like agents or and managers and shit. And when that happened, we found out how important like having a following was. So
yes.
I was like, okay, let's pick back up the content. And I had 10K on Instagram.
Okay.
And then within like a year, I got to like 300-400K on Instagram. Just by picking up that content. Because when I left college, I had like 200K on TikTok. And
I got that
to a million.
Oh my God. So you've had this following for a while.
I've had 200K since before comedy. Yes.
Amazing.
And on Instagram, like maybe 8K or whatever.
Okay.
And then through stand-up, I got, once I figured out the importance of like having social media, I was like, okay, I gotta put more focus into this. And so for a short while, I spent time just trying to do the whole like short form content, like 10-second videos that I knew would just like kind of go viral. So
that's
what kind of got me my following. And then what started paying me from it was doing over a minute, making the videos over a minute. And that's when I had to make like, the characters and like just like kind of just being mad over and over again for like a minute straight or
whatever.
Would
you say
the fuck.
That's kind of what your chosen persona is online, is like angry, a little neurotic and screaming?
I think neurotic for sure. Cause it's, I don't know if it's not always angry. Sometimes it's like scared.
Yeah.
Or like panicked,
frustrated.
Yeah. So it's all those like extreme feelings.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like a part of me is like, you need to definitely have, some kind of extreme reaction happening in order for people to kind of just want to keep watching.
Totally. What was your first ever viral video?
The one that hit the hardest, to my knowledge, is this the one where I was playing a little kid when he discovers like somebody's like arm is fucked up.
Oh yeah,
like, in public.
I've seen that. And, like,
that yeah, that's so the one that everybody. Funny. That's the one that everyone brings up. Yeah, and I love that one. What's wrong with his arm? Yeah. But that was also one of the ones where it's like, this is a very easy idea in my head. I'm not sure if I want to keep doing like kid videos.
Yeah, or making fun of handicaps.
Right, exactly. Because that's not usually my style.
Yeah.
I have one that I'm going to be coming, I started writing this week.
You heard it here first.
Dude, yeah, hell yeah. And it's going to be coming out. I can't wait to shoot it. But it's like, I was thinking of like stand-up jokes and being like, okay, I don't usually do fat jokes, but I was thinking like, oh, I was so fat. Even like the stork that delivered me had problems delivering me because I was such a big baby. But then I looked it up. I wanted to see how much storks could actually carry.
Uh-huh. And you love animal stuff too.
I do like animal stuff. Yeah. But it's like, I like any like idea, because storks delivering babies is an absurd idea that we've just, fact that it exists. Like, I like that.
Yes.
Like, I like that shit. And a lot of it just happens to center around animals. So it's like the fact that praying mantises like eat each other during sex and shit like that. Like, I just love when fun shit facts like that happens.
Yeah,
and then making it like personified, like making a human version of like how these motherfuckers would react if it was actually happening.
Uh-huh.
And so I looked up how much a stork could actually carry in its mouth, and it was only half a pound, which means if storks were actually delivering babies, the only babies they were delivering are like aborted or
babies fetuses never came to fruition.
Very preemie, dead babies.
That's so interesting.
I was like, okay.
Remember the dead baby phase? What the hell is wrong with us? Or was that my age?
No. I had that too.
What the hell was that?
It might have been. Oh, how old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay. My sister falls in the same category.
Yes.
Where in high school, she used to do this thing where she would print out a list of the darkest jokes like that she could find on the internet and then bring them to high school and just share with her friends.
That's so funny.
So it was all like, it was all racist. Like, they're funny, but like, I don't know. Yes, they're funny.
Uh-huh.
But none of them have like the interest. Like, none of them can get on stage and do what I do.
Yeah,
I think I'm one of the first ones that could do that, have been proven to like, I can be in front of large groups of people and do this.
Yeah.
Like, they're all funny, very funny, but to themselves.
Yeah.
And even my best friends who don't do comedy, I think they're funnier than most of the comedians I know.
Mm-hmm.
Just they'll never get on stage because they don't have that need.
Yeah.
I guess.
Or their insecurities stop them. My best friend is very funny.
Yeah.
And she once told me years ago that she wanted to do stand-up. And she even was writing jokes in college in a notebook, but she's never...
But she told you she wanted to get into
it,
though?
she only talked about it one time in college. And
were you
she
excited
had
about
a
it
notebook.
Or what?
Yeah, I was like, that's so interesting. And then like, it was almost like she told me a dark secret, and then we never brought it up again.
Yeah.
Okay. So I forgot. I need to bring that up with her again. But yeah, it's interesting. I never thought I would do stand up. Honestly, I hate being in front of people or speaking publicly.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And that's even more impressive that you end up doing it, you know?
Thanks.
You're the one, I'm just a dead ass. That's so cool. Because, like, for me, I feel like, I had, like,
My studio setup isn't up to par for Matt. I'm so sorry.
It's really not.
It tightens up.
All right, cool. This is better.
Yeah. The audio will be really great for the second half of this podcast.
For me, For me, it's like, growing up, I always had that desire to be the center of attention thing.
Yes, same. I had that.
You did have that.
Yeah.
But you didn't have what though? You didn't have that part of you that wanted to necessarily perform.
Yeah, like I took a public speaking class in college and I would get wasted for it. It was like a 10 a.m. like academic class.
Yeah.
And like I would get hammered in my sorority house before and I would just like wobble into class and like get through my speech and then like slump into my chair and be hungover by noon.
That's great.
Like, cause I gave my first ever speech sober. They said, go up and just talk to the room about anything for 1 minute. And I thought, okay, I'll go up there and talk for a minute, whatever.
Yeah.
And I get up there and my legs started shaking. And I was like, fuck this. I am not doing this again. I will be hammered anytime I have to get up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then my mom asked how class was going once. And I was like, really well. And she was like, well, what changed? And I was like, I might have taken a few shots. And she was, excuse me? And she's like, Tori, that's not the point of the class. And I was like, I know. I just got really nervous. And she's like, okay, that's fine. Just promise me you'll do your last speech sober. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you got it. I can do that. By that point, I will have the reps in. I'll be good.
Right.
So I get up there. And the assignment for the last speech was a ceremonial speech. So okay. People were doing like maid of honor speeches, yeah. Brother the groom. Like everyone was doing some sort of wedding speech. That's mm-hmm. kind of where they netted out. I thought it'd be hilarious to give a eulogy for my hamster.
Okay.
Thinking I was going to murder. I was going to slay the house down.
That's good. That's great.
I get up there and all the people are just staring at me like something is deeply wrong with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, God damn it. So I got through it. If you were hammered,
it would have gone. It would have crushed.
I wouldn't even known and I wouldn't cared. I've been like, y'all don't even get comedy. Yeah. But it's a true story. I mean, I had a gerbil named William Wallace, named after Braveheart. And he lived for 4 years, which is iconic for a gerbil.
Oh, sick.
So it was rooted in truth and like these crazy moments I had with William throughout the years. And I thought, this is going to be great. Like, this girl's a fucking freak. So yeah, it didn't end well, which is why I never really wanted to do that again.
Right.
And then I found Comedy Cellar and I just, you know, stuck with it.
But when you started stand-up, you were also doing it drunk or no?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for
when
like...
When did you stop doing stand-up drunk, like for the first time?
I went sober for a year.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were definitely sets where like my first ever set where I didn't get drunk for. And again, I'm not talking like blackout every time, like, but I felt like I had to have like a glass of wine before getting on stage. Like that was my like safety blanket.
Yeah.
And then one show I was too hungover to drink. So I was like, all right. But I was too out of it to really even care at that point.
Okay.
So that was one time where I was like, okay, you can do this without alcohol.
Being hungover at nighttime when a show was about to happen. So like you were you woke up late as hell and then just went to go do a show.
Yeah, I had a bad day. It was not I really overdid it.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that was one time. I remember it still where I was like, oh, you don't need to drink for this.
Yeah.
And then I went sober for a year. So, and that was when I was touring.
Okay.
So I was like in big rooms and it's like, I had to just, I mean, there were definitely moments like earlier on where I was like, how am I going to do this? Like I'm sweating before getting on stage. Like before Magoobies was one of my first times in a big room like that because he sold it out. And I think it seats like 300 and I was hosting. So it was cold open.
Yeah.
Hosting / featuring. And then I was my hometown. So it's like I have a lot of like friends and family in the room. And I remember just
you're drinking or not drinking?
I was sober. Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember like hugging the side of the wall before walking into the showroom.
Yeah.
Where they're like doing like the God mic of like, welcome to Magoobies. And my like childhood friend walks by me and I hadn't seen him in years. And he's like, hey. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know you were coming. So then there's that added layer. And then I remember just like touching the wall and breathing and being like, okay, you're going to do this. But what's crazy was anytime I got on stage and it's like, once I got my first laugh, it was like taking a shot where it's mm-hmm. like, okay, now I have my first laugh. I'm fine now.
Good.
And even my dad, he was there and he was like, you seem really comfortable. And I was like, thank you. I was shitting my pants.
Oh, good.
Right before I did that. So yeah, I think I fooled a lot of people with like my nerves and just kind of like burying them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely not something that comes natural to me, like me to like just be chill in front. And I also for my day job, I have to present. And like, for example, this year, my biggest market that I manage is Baltimore. And the budget for it was multi-millions of dollars. And like they're like Lexus is in the room, the dealers are in the room, and I have to present their numbers. And like this year the numbers weren't as strong as they have been in the past.
Right.
And I'm dyslexic as fuck.
Oh shit.
So I'm looking at this screen up on the wall in front of like all these really intense people. And it's like my palms are wet. Like like I can get on stage in front of like hundreds of people now, talk about shitting myself. Yeah. But I was shitting myself in that meeting. So like it's still like it's very situational. Like I haven't gotten over it. Like I'm still like it's an everyday struggle of like, you're fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I've never been able to I can't get high. I've been doing it recently where I go on stage high.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like it as much as doing it just like knowing, like being in full control of my brain. But I will say I understand the desire to go for alcohol because sometimes when I am really fucking nervous, mm-hmm. having like even just a sip of like a rum and coke will just loosen my ass.
Totally.
Like I feel the muscles like unclench. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. I feel so much better.
Yeah.
Even if it's like not even enough to get me drunk, I'm like,
totally.
That shit works.
Placebo.
Yeah.
When do you get nervous? Because you're saying you really naturally don't.
Whenever I'm first up hosting.
Okay.
That gives me some nerves sometimes. And usually sometimes when I think it's like important, if somebody important's in the room.
Totally. That's something that really spooks me for the future. Like if I would ever be like an audition show, or it's like, it's just so annoying how you can't just tell your brain like, relax.
Yeah. Just do what you do.
Yeah.
It's like, I wish I could just forget something.
Yes.
Like if I knew something important was coming up, if I could just forget the moment before going on stage that anybody important's even out there, I would have so much of a better time.
I'm the same way where what I love about touring and what I love what it's like, you walk into a room where no one knows who you are.
Mm.
That's my favorite spot to be in, where it's like, they don't know who I am. I could shit myself on the stage and they would go home and be like, that was weird. But they would forget I exist. Yeah. I wouldn't know who they were. I would move on with my life.
Right.
But what I really don't like is whether it's like, if it's friends or family, or if it's comedians that I really look up to in the room, that's when I'm like, not well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck. Because if they, I think about what they think of my material.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a layer of that. And then it's like, how am I delivering the jokes? Mm-hmm. And then like, it's just everything. It's like they're judging 100%. All of it. And they know it just better, like better than I do. So it's scary. And you want them to like you. So you're like, oh, fuck.
Recently, I was just at Skankfest in New Orleans. Very fun time. Very fun.
I'm glad you had fun. Others didn't.
It was good. I like, the thing is though, like I clearly, like when they don't know you very well, they'll give you the spot times that are like, they know that it's going to have like lesser people in the room at that time. So we're in the Creek Cave room, which is a really cool room when it's packed. And even when it's not packed, like if you have 10, 15 people just sitting in those chairs and they're all spread out, you can still have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can notice when your set is doing really good and really hitting in that room, because like a good like eight of the 15 people are belly laughing. Like that's what you want, you know? So like I'm crushing for this room, like for what it can be. And thank God, like I didn't know other people like are in the back like watching, so I can't really see that far.
Yeah.
And I was just doing the best with what I had, and I was like, okay, the show kind of just means nothing. Like nobody's here. Yeah. Let's just go out there and try to just have fun with these people.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, people are like, oh no, Bobby Kelly watched you. He saw you crush. I was like, oh okay,
so
good.
So nice.
Oh good. Yeah. So I much rather do it like not knowing is the best.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who gets excited when they're like, oh, like someone important, someone well known.
The pressure
sitting
takes
in the
fun away a lot of times.
Yeah.
So that's awesome though. I agree though. It's like, I always have way more fun where it's like you walk out expecting nothing and like, let me just have fun with whoever's in the room. I'm like that at Greenwich a lot if it's like a slower night and it's like, I work there. So it's like my living room.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I always tell myself, put this in a bottle and like remember this feeling so that when you are in an intense room, bring this same energy with you.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to remind myself of that, because if you can just trick yourself and be like, no, it's like you're at Greenwich, you're just having fun with a few people, keep that energy and like do that anywhere, because that's really, I really think too, if you're just having fun, that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely.
Yeah. Who's your favorite comedian?
No, oh, do I never know? I never know. I think I always go back to John Mulaney.
Okay.
Because
I will say his latest was really good.
I loved it. People hated Baby J. I loved Baby J a lot.
I thought it was my favorite of all of his work.
Yeah.
I kind of watched it like, let's see what he's got. And then I was like, obviously it was a lot of storytelling and it's like so unrelatable in the sense of like, I'm not an addict who steals Rolexes. The way he can storytell with jokes, brilliant.
And he's always been that way. He's very good at telling stories.
Yes.
And that's what I loved, even though a lot of my set is not that. I also love this guy named James Acaster, who's like in,
I love him.
He had a Netflix series called like Repertoire, which was like just three back-to-back specials or maybe four of like 45 minutes to an hour. And he's like in his early 20s releasing 4 hours of comedy, and it's all working so good, and it's on Netflix. That's one of the first things that I watched even before I got into stand-up.
Yeah.
And now that I'm in stand-up, I think my third favorite comedian right now is Robbie Hoffman.
Okay.
She's so good.
She's
fucking remarkable.
I haven't watched her stand-up before.
Dude, she's like she gets compared to Larry David a lot, but she's also like she's such a character. And actually, John Mulaney is directing her Netflix special.
I saw that.
So, dude,
I need to check her out. I love James Acaster. He has Jigsaw, right? James Acaster?
I don't know.
Let me look, because this is going to bother me. And that's one of my favorite specials of all time. Like, it's brilliant.
Jigsaw. I don't think so. Is that Simon
No, someone has a special called Jigsaw.
Jigsaw comedy
special. I'm pretty sure. Fuck. All right, I have to look up who wrote Jigsaw, because basically this comedian has a whole entire set about... Oh, it's Daniel Sloss.
Yeah, okay. Daniel Sloss.
That's I love talking. Jigsaw. I get Daniel Sloss and James Acaster mixed up.
Is that
the one
where he talks about his sister being in a, like, being disabled? Or is
yes,
that a,
yeah? That's in there. And it's like all about how, like, humans are jigsaw puzzles. And it's like he's all about, like, not wanting to add anybody to his puzzle because mm-hmm. his life is so great.
Oh, cool.
And he kind of ends it with being like, unless you really fit into my jigsaw, it's like, I don't want you in my life. And it's like a really good, like, dating advice of, like, don't smash someone in your puzzle just because you're lonely or, like, want to be with someone. It's like they have to fit. And it's all about, like, getting older and you find kind of what you like. And it's he jokes at the end where he wants to laminate his jigsaw because he's like, I don't have room for anyone else.
Yeah.
But he's, like, married now. So it's kind of like, all right.
I love that.
Big talker.
I like that. I like a lot of his stuff. His stuff about his sister, his stuff about his friend who was sexually assaulted. I think that was really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Going with his friend to get an abortion. Like, he mm-hmm. has a lot of really good bits.
Yeah. And I love that with stand-up. It's like, my dream is to have a message in mm-hmm. my stand-up.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't know what it is though.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, my favorite quote. Well. My favorite quote in life is nothing matters. Nobody knows what they're doing, and we're all gonna die.
Yeah.
So I really want people to live their lives based off that, where it's like, do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing matters. It's like, obviously, be a good person and, like, don't harm anyone and make the world a better place in whatever, like, ability you can to do so. But, like, but have fun. Like, we're all gonna die. Like,
do what you want.
Just
do.
Live
I
and
get it.
Yeah.
For me, it's like I've always my stand up. I find myself making dumb jokes, and so therefore naturally I'm becoming like I'm growing this message of like ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like don't try to know everything. But then I another part of me like sees like politically like whatever's happening in the world, and I'm like, oh, how cool would it be to just know what's going on.
Yeah, well, do you have ChatGPT for that now?
No, but I hate that. I hate that. Me and Corey get into fights all the fucking time where it's like we'll be opposed on something, and then instead of telling me his opinions and trying to argue with me, he just pulls up ChatGPT to do it for him. And I'm like, that's cheating.
Yeah, that's cheating.
Know the info beforehand, please.
I think if you're going to be passionate about a point, you mm-hmm. have to know the information. But if you're looking for, you know, concrete information, I do think that it is a tool to have that.
Yeah. But you can also do this thing where ChatGPT, where it's like, give me all the reasonings that, you know, help my argument.
That's true. You know? I mean, what's scary is like, I keep seeing these TikToks where it's like, these people mimicking like their ChatGPT, and they're like, that's a great idea. You're so smart. And I was like, what the fuck? I thought I was special. I thought that's how my chat talked to me.
What the fuck? It's telling people who don't even like write comedy that they're funny.
I know.
It's like, shut the fuck
up. So that really spooked me. I was like, oh, I thought I was different, and I thought my chat really got who I was. So I do think chat is a little... Well, then someone was like, yeah, they want you to love it so that you pay for it. And I was like, I am paying for it.
You paid for ChatGPT?
Yeah, one time it cut me off and I was like, no, I need this.
Oh, yeah. It's like you can only answer 10 prompts a day
and
or some shit
I did really use it the past... No, really. I was like, no, I'm asking you about if a guy likes me or not right now. And I was like, you have to tell me. And
what are the signs?
Yeah, they were like, for $19. I was like, tell me. They're like, he doesn't.
Instead of just asking him for free.
Yeah, right? I'm like, hey, what are we?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, also, I also think... Hot take, it's like if you have to ask chat about a relationship, don't be a part of it. Do not be a part of it.
Don't be a part
exit.
Of the relationship or exit the app?
Exit the relationship.
Oh,
if you're like, what does
if
he
you're
mean
unsure,
by this? Yeah, just
that's
cut
a red
it.
Flag.
Yeah,
hell yeah,
you
absolutely.
Should not talk to chat about any relationship.
Right.
You should know where you stand with someone.
Because obviously, if you're confused enough to have to go to outward help, then that means there's no communication. Like
exactly.
There's a communication barrier.
That
in
means
itself.
It's going to burn. And they have. And all of them have. And I was asking chat about them. And.
Dude, love sucks.
Yeah, it's tricky.
I don't know. And I'm so, like, in my brain of, like, loving touring right now,
uh-huh.
It's like I would love to find like somebody to fit my jigsaw piece, mm-hmm. but I don't even know what I want right now, so I don't want to put somebody else through that.
Yeah, touring's hard, too, because you're always gone.
Yeah.
And sorry, your mic sucks.
It does.
It really, I'm so sorry.
I hope the people don't mind, but look at this.
I know. And that's as tight as it goes?
I think so.
I think... really
sorry. I don't want to break it.
Yeah, well, we're
okay.
We're doing our best in the studio. Look at that. See, you just needed to use it better.
I just had to, yeah.
But now it's kind of covering your face.
No, okay, I'll fix it.
Okay.
Great.
Amazing.
That's how I feel about love touring? As a comedian.
Honestly, I will say being a comedian, because it's like, also we have really strong goals. So mm-hmm. it's like, our goal isn't like, have a family. It's like, right. when you're literally like, all I want is a strong career. Yeah. And this is what I've been pouring my heart and soul into. It's like, why would I have something that jeopardizes that?
People out here want to be married and have kids. And yeah. I want to put out a comedy special.
Exactly. Same.
That's where I want to put my money towards. Yes.
And it's like, if I were to stop doing this to do that, obviously there's a world where you can do both, but I do think it's difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like I just shat away 6 years if I, 4 years, if
no,
I.
No. You should go by six, dude. Okay. I love having, I see it from both ways. I don't think you should change your shit up. Thank like you. I definitely feel both. I feel both for sure.
But no, I agree. I mean, also it's like, yeah, touring, you're gone all the time. I always say, like, I used to always want to be like bi-coastal. Mm-hmm. And then for a while I was kind of living back and forth between a lot of places, like especially like during the pandemic. But I learned during those times, I go, when you're everywhere, you're nowhere. So it's like people who you love are in other cities, but they kind of forget to hit you up for plans.
Yeah.
And I felt that when I was touring a lot too, like when you're everywhere, you're nowhere, because I would get home to the city, I'd have no plans, mm-hmm. no one would hit me up. And I'm like sitting here and I'm like, nobody cares about me. It's like, no, bitch, you just haven't been here.
Yeah.
So no life, one's going to.
Life's going to move on.
Yeah, it's like, unless you make plans or, you know, make, you know, an effort, you're not going to be known.
That's what's scary about death. That's what scares me about death. The idea that like life is going to keep moving on, just like you're just not going to be a part of like those plans that you usually be a plan be a part of. That shit creeps me the fuck out.
Do you have a fear of dying?
I have I don't think so. I have existential dread where it's like I'd love if heaven existed, but at the same time I would hate if heaven existed.
Right.
You know,
are you religious?
No. I was I think raised religious and now I'm more like agnostic. Mm-hmm. But then I'm always like feeling like I should be borderline atheist, but I'm so scared to be atheist.
Totally.
And also, so I'm like, if you're atheist and then something is fucking there, you're done. At least for me, I feel a little more safer being agnostic, because I can just be like, well, I didn't know, and you didn't really do a good job, and so you should let me in.
I feel like agnostic is also the friendly atheist. Like, atheist aligns with haters.
Yes.
And then it's like they were burned. Either they grew up in a cult, and they're like, fuck this, I'm getting out. Yeah. Like, those are the atheists. Like, they were like either burned by it or like have a deep hate within them.
Yeah.
Hot take. But agnostics are kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. Gee golly, I don't know.
Like, I don't know, and I hope. But then you think of the things where it's like, I was just talking to a girl about this where she was like, she's very religious, and she's asking me if I am, and I'm like, no, because like if God's real and all these bad things are happening on earth, that either means that he's like either all powerful or he's not all good. Right.
Yeah.
Or he's not either not all powerful or not all good. And she's like, oh, I never thought about that. I was like, how do you never thought about that?
Yeah.
I think about that all the time.
I think some people that are really religious are kind of stuck in like a little like bit of a rose colored glasses situation. Yeah.
Rose colored glasses.
Yeah. That's a saying too. You're filled, bro.
You're filled with them. That's so sick. That's what else just, you got? What else you got?
They're just going to keep flowing out of me.
They'll keep talking to you. It's going to, we'll find more.
They're coming out. That's so sick. I think they're just like, Jesus saves. And they just think that. And then
can you tell me what rose colored glasses means?
It means everything you see is through this lens of like, it's all good and awesome.
Sick.
You've never heard rose colored glasses?
Not once.
That's crazy.
Literally not once.
I guess maybe, I don't know.
Whirling
dervish, which apparently is a Muslim saying, which I never knew.
Oh, shit.
Anyways.
Fuck, dude. I love that a lot. But yeah, no, that's how so I have existential problems where it's like I'm always going to be kind of afraid of what happens afterwards. And I don't see me ever being at peace with that. Like, I don't think I don't have that part of the brain that can just be like, let it go.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. If it's going to happen.
Right.
I don't. Every time I think about it, I have to worry. So all I can do is distract myself and not think about
it. Present as a pigeon is a saying.
President is a pigeon?
No, present as a pigeon.
Oh, oh. President as a pigeon?
Pigeons
don't You're making them up now. No, now no, you're making them up.
Google it. President as a pigeon. No, because they don't think about dying. And so that's a saying because they're stupid. So it's like if you're present as a pigeon, you're not going to think about dying.
Love that.
Yeah, and they're just like, duh. They just all they collect their little trash off the ground and they're just like present as a pigeon.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to be.
So sick.
You should do a bit about that.
No, no, like an animal that knows it's gonna die.
It.
No one will get it.
I liked your video where you're a dog and they are getting another. They got another dog.
Yeah,
and you're like, I'm 12. Like, you know, I'm gonna live long for a long time, right? And like, it's so clear. It's like it's so funny because it's like dogs don't think like, oh, gee, golly, I'm getting up there. Like, my time's coming. It's like they just are there until they're not, and they're like, you're like, okay, you don't know any
better. I'm envious of dogs how they have that shit.
Yeah.
And also, you hear how some animals just like kind of know that when they're gonna go.
They like go to a hole.
They feel it, and they walk into the woods. Yeah, and they never come back. What the fuck? What the hell? Are you kidding?
That's really funny. It's like, That'd be a good bit.
It's like, instead of sleeping in my dog bed tonight, let's go do it in the woods. I got a good feeling about this. It's like crazy shit.
You should do
that. That is a good one. That's a really good one.
Where it's like, you just like start walking to the woods and you're like, I don't know, guys.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Something in the woods is calling me.
And also like a lot of animals will like go to their favorite place in the house or curl up and just they're dead. Most good animal owners will like take them to the vet and put them down. But like if it gets when an animal dies naturally in someone's house, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know. He's old. He died. It's like, what's wrong with you? Like, I think that's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah. I also like how animals have this very they seem to be like knowing when other things are like present in the room, that like ghosts and shit. Like, yeah, that's cool.
When cats look above your head, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, don't look above my head.
You little devil.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't look above my head.
You're freaking me the fuck out right now.
Yeah,
don't do that at all. I like that. I gotta do the that one's definitely good.
Yeah, what got you into the animal?
It's just those were the first ones that I would think, and it wasn't only that, but it's just like there's so many funny things about dogs that I feel like I can make videos about, and that's what ended up happening. I was like, okay, what other cool things out there exist? Like, I love personifying kids because they don't really have the words to like express themselves fully. Yeah. So it's fun to be able to do that with like my vocabulary and my voice to just give it to something that can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll also probably, if I had a good one about plants, like if I had a good one about like a Venus flytrap, I would do plants too. Yeah. You know, it's anything that currently doesn't have that personified voice.
Oh, like succulents are trendy.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes, absolutely.
Palms, like in apartments, we're like, bitch, it's getting cold.
I'm not going to handle this well. Dude, yes, exactly.
I love
that. So it's all about, it's not an animal thing or like not an animal thing. It's just like things that can't talk.
I like that.
Things that are interesting that can't talk.
I want to like ghostwrite for you. It's so fun.
Dude, send me everything. I ask people all the time, like if you want to see something, because if other people are helping me just like kind of bring these ideas like to my doorstep, more will come out.
Totally.
Well, I'll do it myself eventually.
I'm having so many thoughts for succulents because like, you know how they're always like on a marble table?
Yes.
Where you're like, bitch, I cannot thrive unless I'm on marble.
Yeah.
Or like, put me in that photo shoot, put me in a little latte, but the art better be good.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay.
So good.
Okay, good. I'm excited.
That's good.
Thank you so much.
Oh, but we didn't even talk about the whole stork thing.
Oh yeah.
The idea for that video, which I'm excited about, is that it's like, I thought about it, I was like, what if storks had to deliver every baby?
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, even the babies that like are dead. And like, that's because the whole half pound thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? So it's like, imagine if a stork did have to make all those deliveries, and it's like, he pops up to your front door and it's like,
sorry,
the bag's bloody.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like really dark.
Oh, and then he just drops. It was like that when I got it.
Yeah, dude, exactly.
Or like a Grubhub delivery driver who like has to take a photo of it before he walks away.
Hell yeah, adding that.
That's really good. So good. And he just takes the photo and he's like, ugh.
Oh,
that's so funny. You weren't smiling.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's good.
It's really good.
I love that. I got a photo of, I got something delivered to my house recently and I never got it. So I told the company and they're like, oh, well, here's proof that it was delivered. It was left on the street. It wasn't even put inside my building. It was, hell, I go, yeah. Hey, yeah, by the way, I didn't get it because it was left in the streets of New York City. Like, and I like that the guy took a photo of it on the ground out there where that is like so much vomit. And the guy just took a photo like, this is good.
Is that how it works? They can just leave it outside the building, or are they supposed to bring it to your door?
They should bring it into the door. That's how, what's like considered delivered. That's like if someone were to deliver a package to a house and leave it in the road.
Like, yeah, in the road.
Yeah, it's like they didn't put it on their stoop. They left it in the middle of it. And yeah, I was like, that's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. So what do you do when you're placing an order on like Uber Eats or whatever, you put it in the delivery instructions mm-hmm. to like certain ways
and
to get in the house?
I usually know how to work the door. Cool. iPad.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, I've had food left outside that was not there anymore. And then yeah, the other thing I got, which one was star. A stupid little like air freshener that I thought was funny. It said hot girls hit curbs. It's like, I don't need it. I was bored. And my one of my rims is like destroyed because I hit a curb.
Yeah.
So it's my way of like gaslighting myself to be like, this is funny and okay. Like it just was served to me on Instagram and I was like, I need this. But, so the guy that was literally was like, no, bitch, you don't need this at all. So fuck you.
I like that. I like that. Instagram sometimes will give you some good shit.
Right?
I haven't bought it yet, but I keep seeing this. It's been on my algorithm. It keeps coming back because I keep liking it. Uh-huh. I'm liking an ad. You know, like it's an ad that I love.
They're like, he likes it.
And it's this little thing that you put. It's like it's a goose on a swing that uh-huh. you can put on your mirror, like in your car.
Oh, that's funny. And it's
like as you're driving, it just swings back and forth.
I love that.
It's
you need
so
that.
Funny.
I think it would bring you a lot of joy.
It would bring me so much joy. But it would also be distracting as fuck.
I had dice and it was very distracting. Hell I was like, I'm going to get in a car accident. It was like fuzzy, like knitted dice. And I'm like, they were like half of my view. And I was like committed to the dice vibes. I had a Wrangler. I was like, this is cool.
Getting into an accident is one good way to roll the dice.
That's true. And I have the roll the dice tattoo on my arm.
You do? You have a tattoo of a...
Yeah, me and Natalie Cuomo got these this summer.
Yeah, that one's sick. Some of them look like they're not in all the way.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, they were supposed to be light and subtle. But then I got a real tattoo and it was like, oh, the rest are fake. This is usually my aesthetic. And then I was like, I went to like some like grunge.
You can ask for just like a lighter tattoo.
Yeah, well, like a very fine needle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I had. No, I guess I didn't. But like this one is way like thicker than like this one is. And I don't like them next to each other now.
Yeah, I know. I get it. I feel off about my giant thick dice, but it's there now.
That should be on tattoo artists. They should understand.
Well, I asked him to make it as thin as possible.
The dice one?
Yeah.
And that's what he did?
Yeah. He was a man, you know?
It's bad.
The other guy is Asian. It's a bad artist. So, and then this was like a trendy boy in LA that made this tiny little bonus land. He's like a
What's
wizard.
Bonus land? What is
bonus
that?
Bonus land is when you wake up drunk from the night before. And you're just kind of like, whoa. And you're like in this like borrowed time.
What?
Yeah, it's
can
like.
Can you explain that to me? Like, is that another one of your things?
Okay, you know when you wake up hungover.
Four new terms, dude. That's so sick.
You know when you wake up hungover and you're kind of like slap happy. Everything makes you laugh. And like your hangover hasn't hit, so you still feel good.
So you're still drunk.
Yeah.
That's called bonus land?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really sick.
Isn't that fun? My friend used to always say it in college, and even after college, she'd be like, we're in bonus land, like, let's go out, let's get brunch, and I'd be like, let's fucking go, and then, like, halfway through brunch, we're, like, spitting up our eggs, we're like, we're not okay anymore.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because it hits you later, unless you
start
drinking
again. The hangover
still
hits you, you can't wake up with it, like, you will, like, even if you're awake, it will slowly start
to creeps in, or you get tired. If you eat and drink through it, like, you can usually recover, cool. But, anyways, I used to write a blog, and mm-hmm. I had a blog article that I called Bonus Land, because when I was younger, I was like in college, I was in like a car accident where my friends were all piled into a car. The guy that was driving was drunk.
Yeah.
And someone in the car goes, you won't go 100. So the driver floors it. He's going 80 miles an hour. He hits a mailbox. It shatters the windshield. And then we get back to the house. And I was like, God, I'm just getting out being like, fuck you. What the hell? And then end scene there. But the next day I was babysitting. I remember sitting on their couch and I got a text. It was from my friend. And he was like, by the way, he sent me a photo and he's like, this is the tire track and this is a giant oak tree that you guys almost hit. And it was like this massive
Holy
tree. And I was
shit.
Like, oh, wow. Like if we were a foot over, we'd all be dead because none of us were wearing. I was like laying across four friends' lap. We had one friend in the trunk of a sedan.
So
like that
bonus
level.
Land is also like, oh, we're still here after we shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's like bonus land.
Oh,
like,
I love that,
thank
Tori.
You.
I love that. I fucking love that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, whenever I get really sad, I'm like, well, you're just lucky to be here. Like, that's the dramatic take, but like had I been a foot over in that car, like we would have all died because we were going so fast, And we were so close to that tree. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just lucky.
We were walking in New Orleans to go get like this really cool like po' boy or this po' boy place. And someone threw a fucking glass like and it hit the ground literally just a foot over from next to me. Mm-hmm. But they threw it so hard and the glass shattered everywhere. And thank God this glass shattered like that way. Oh, it was coming from here. But if I was a foot over, fucking could have dealt some real damage.
That's so scary.
Crazy shit.
That's great when shit falls from the sky too. Like I've always heard stories about like AC units falling from the sky and like that could hit people. Like, yeah. Or just yeah, especially in New York, I'm always head on a swivel. Like mm-hmm. It's just like little things can happen all the time. And I've been watching, you know, The Pit.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
Okay, yeah, so good. I've got two episodes left, and but you're watching it, you're just like, freak accidents happen all the time. I have a friend that works in an ER, and so it's like I've heard her stories and I've seen her photos, mm-hmm. which I don't know if she's allowed to show me, but but I'm looking at the shit and it's like what she's showed me aligns with how graphic it gets. Like I'm like, and it's like I have a friend that's like literally living this life, and it's like also it's like that one episode with the mass shooting. You're like, this is not far from the truth. Like this happened in Vegas, like in 2017. Like this really fucking happens, and it's like you get so sucked into these shows that you're like, damn. And like I'm embarrassed to admit, but I got home from a work trip at 3 o'clock yesterday and I was like, I work today, I'm doing nothing. So I sit on my couch, I watched 11 episodes of The Pit.
Holy shit.
So today I left my apartment for the first time since yesterday at 3. I'm like head on a swivel, like something's gonna happen to me. Yeah.
Fire.
Yeah. Whenever I watch a show like that, I become the show. Like that show is my life. You know what I mean? Like it's weird that I'm actually here right now. I should be in that like emergency room.
I gotta get to my shift.
Yeah, I'm like, I gotta figure out how this goes.
This woman's leg is off. You see that part where like they're literally like peeling this woman's, she fell on the train tracks, whatever the fuck. Jesus Christ.
I sent that photo to my friend yesterday. I took a photo of that exact moment.
It's of your TV though. Yeah. Your friend sending you photos of her actually literally. In the ER. You're like, same girl.
Yeah, I'm like, I totally get your life now. Oh yeah.
So good. I'm watching Pluribus right now. I like Pluribus a lot.
I've never heard of that.
It's like the guy who did Breaking Bad. It's his new show it's like everybody, like there's this disease going on where everybody's like really happy and have like a hive mind. Uh-huh. And it doesn't affect everybody. It's like there's one woman who's like depressed or like she's not very happy. Uh-huh. But like, she's the only person in the world that's like not happy. Oh, and she's like trying to figure out how to like get everybody back to normal and shit.
I love shows because also it's probably some weird like existential real life cultural phenomenon that it's like trying to shed a light on.
100%. I don't know how people do that shit.
It's wild. No, it's nuts.
It's totally, it's either about like AI or it's about like individualism. Yes. It's always like this deeper meaning for a show and it's like, what the fuck?
I know.
How are you that smart that you're doing that?
And like the plot twists and the it's so crazy you say that because okay, I've been in a weird binge phase lately. It's like I'm like, am I depressed? But I've watched all of The Beast in Me, all of All Her
Fault. I haven't watched that yet. Was Beast in Me so good? Okay, good.
You gotta watch.
What is it about? What is that?
Beast in Me is a woman who's a writer. Okay. She lives next door and she got new neighbors, and this guy, her new neighbor, is like in the news for like some shady like might have killed his wife drama.
Okay.
And she writes books, so she's like, let me do a biography on him, because he wanted to like do a running path through her yard, and she's like, look, you can get your running path if I get to write this book about you. You can tell your story. She kind of like gaslights him, being like, because she doesn't really know if he's a murderer or not, mm-hmm. but he's gotten away with it, so she's like, maybe he can tell his true story. But then the plot twists, it's like, it's a crazy, like it's layered, it's so cool. I actually was sitting here like hand over my mouth gasping alone, like gee golly. It really is so good. But to the point I'm making, though, is that all these shows I've been watching lately, it's been showing that like a theme throughout these shows is that people do bad things because they want to do good things for others. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Task?
No, but I know that's Mark
Ruffalo. So basically, it's like all these people are put in these like tough positions and they're forced to do these bad things, but they're really like, there's a lot of underlying like, oh, it's because they wanted to help their mom who like has cancer and she needed money. And it's like, he robbed a bank to do that. Or like, it's like, and then also same with Roofman. I just watched that movie.
Roofman was great.
So good.
Very good.
But same situation where it's like, he just wanted to get his daughter a bike.
I know.
So it's been this really interesting, it's like, you never know what people's motives are. And like, what's crazy is that in these shows, it's
shining a light on morality.
Yeah. It's like in these shows, and I'm sure there's some reality in real life where it's like, people are doing bad things to do good things.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Obviously, there's like bad people in the world who do bad things just to be bad. But it's been a really interesting theme in all the things that I've been watching.
That's really cool. I like Ozark was kind of like that. Ozark was great. Severance. You ever watch Severance?
Now that I'm, okay, I used to not be a thriller girl. I used to just be like, comedy.
I'm all about a good premise, though.
Same. So the I want to watch it now.
I'll watch the whole fucking thing.
That's where the family all hates each other, right?
Severance?
Oh, okay, what's...
No, that's what? Succession.
Thank you.
Dude, you'll love Succession, too. Okay. Succession's great.
I'm scared that I'm becoming like, a hermit.
They're all villains in that show. They're all like super fucking rich, so it's like a part of you is like, fuck these guys.
Yeah.
But then another part of you, you still get invested because it's about them. Isn't that so funny? I love that.
When people are rich, you don't feel bad for them. Like, I saw an article about a girl like getting in a car accident in a Cybertruck, and I felt just slightly less bad for her because it was a Cybertruck. And I feel terrible. It's like, that's so bad. She got hurt, or maybe she died. I forget the total news, but like, I was like,
I'm glad that Cybertruck isn't
here anymore.
Got
fucked up. It's terrible. It's like, no, it's still a person. You shouldn't feel that way.
I know.
But no, I've been really bad about binge watching shows. Like, I'm a little worried for my mental health.
You gotta catch up. Well, so you're saying you're doing a lot of binging, though.
Binging.
Well, good. Like, I can't you're probably stop. Missing out on a lot. You're probably missing out on so much.
Yeah.
You know? Do you do any like writing like pilots of your own at all or what?
My dream is to write a book that becomes a movie.
Cool.
But
you don't but have that. I you don't have the premise anything? Yet. Do you have the premise or no?
Well, I really want it to be kind of based on my life, but it's like called Feature Act. It would be like the premise overall of like someone who's not really making it yet in comedy, but like is touring and doing all these things. And then it's like the dating life throughout it and like the experiences on the road. And
that's cool.
Thanks. I think there's something really interesting there.
There's a lot of dating life stuff that's out there about comedians.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I think it could be an interesting take. Cause I do think my touring comedy and my dating life has been very unique.
Yeah.
And I think again, yeah, when I explain my dating life to people, they're like, are you okay? Like, what's wrong? Like, what the fuck? Are you really saying what I'm thinking you're saying right now? So it's like, if I could tell a story about it, it could be really interesting and funny.
Yeah.
With the comedy and the touring and, I don't know.
I just watched, we were literally in Wisconsin in the green room watching this documentary about Mitch Hedberg.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a half hour one that like used to be on MTV, but I think got taken off. And then Doug Stanhope like uploaded to his YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about... like Mitch's headlining and touring, but he's bringing this guy with him that's like kind of ass, like really bad, but Mitch seems to have like to see something in him, and his name is Possum Man. And he just goes on stage and he does this like possum impression to start it off, and it's just like he makes a really ugly face. And so the people in the audience are like, is this funny? Like, what's he doing? And you just see just how Mitch tries to give that guy like ideas and like advice, and that guy is just like, you don't understand. And Mitch is like, how do I not understand? I'm the headliner and I have this audience that came for me. I feel like I get it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just watching this guy who just like is so sure of himself and is also wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very fun to watch.
Okay.
But it's also like, I love when a documentary or like a comedian takes a project about being a comedian in comedy and sheds like a new light on it somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, I
do you think
agree.
Amy Schumer has a lot of stuff about dating while being a comedian? I don't think so. She had Trainwreck, which is a little bit about that.
Yeah.
But
Inside Amy Schumer was a bunch of little sketches, but nothing I think that really showcased that. And I know she's got stories. So I don't know. Again, I need to write. I had the blog for a while just to see if people would ever care about my writing.
What was the blog? Yeah, so the blog was Boneless Bonus Land.
The blog like, was just my blog, but like there was different. Every week I did a different like I did gratitude jelly, which I have a tattoo of, where it's like all I wrote about. I was on the road once, and like basically the way I told the story was like my time got cut down, and I was pretty upset about that. But then also it's like, why it was cut down was because someone else joined, but I had so much fun with them and I should just be lucky and grateful to have a stage to be on.
Yeah.
So it's me pivoting from like initial like frustrations and angers to then being like, okay, let's zoom out and like see what's really happening here. And then it's like, just be grateful and go with the flow. So like that was gratitude jelly. So it's like each blog piece was under 2 minute read and just kind of like a lesson of the week or like a story from my past and just like where it relates to me now. Or one of them was called Mentory because growing up my sister went to boarding school, so I never really had like a sister to look out for me, so I always kind of feel like I take that on whenever I'm around younger girls where I'm like, I want to help them and like save them from like things that I wish I did differently. So that was one of them, but they were just random. Yeah.
But you still found something to put out every fucking week?
Yeah. I was sober. It was when I was sober.
It's good that you have that, you know, that not dedication, but like that discipline.
Thanks. Well, then I ghosted it.
Yeah, but for how long? How long were you doing
it for a year?
Or was week after? See, that's impressive.
Thank you.
That's fucking impressive. I with my videos right now, I used to release like two times a week, and like now it's like whenever I have a good idea.
Yeah,
you know.
And how often is that? Idea,
like maybe like once a week or like once every 2 weeks.
I'm sure though it's quality now over quantity because you know what hits. You sit on the ideas for a little longer, like. You have the following. You're not fighting for that as much.
Right.
So I think you're probably in a good place with that new flow.
I think so. There's always going to be that like, whatever following number you have right now, it's not enough. It's always going to be like that.
Oh, yeah. When I hit 10K, I was like, woo! And that was 2 years ago. And I was like, next what?
Literally next day, it's like, all right, now it's about getting to 100K.
Yeah.
You know, it's upping that shit, and I'm never gonna get rid of that. I'm addicted to social media.
Yeah,
I doom scroll a lot. It's fucked up, and I don't do enough of just like talking to comedians or talking with friends to just. If I was doing more of that, then the ideas would come way more naturally, and they'd come way more.
I will give you ideas if you help me.
Hell yeah!
Just be like, hey, post today, and I'll be like, hey, what do I post? I gotta figure it out. That's like my biggest, I think. Hurdle right now in my comedy career because like I've
dude, it is so important. It sucks, but social media is so important. There's a lot of people who are like, yeah, I know, Tori, I know, but you have to do it.
I know.
You just gotta let no, like this is how the game is adapting.
I know.
At least for now, you know.
You're so right.
And the people 5 years from now, all the top comedians are comedians that will have had social media followings to get them there. Yeah. Like, you know, like in the future, I it's going to be very, very hard to find a comedian that's the top of the game that also does not have the following to match.
You're right.
So it's just, you just gotta work.
I tell myself that I'm at the right place with where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, like, let's, because I like my act. I think it's very
good.
Your
act's great.
Thank you.
From what I've seen. I don't think I've seen your whole 45. But you do well whenever we're on shows together.
Thank you. So. And I really think, okay, if I were to get that next wave and I do start to get some stage time of my own, I'm like, oh, I'm ready. And that's a better place to be in than getting the following and not being ready.
Yeah.
So I feel good about that. But I do also feel somewhat hateful and frustrated.
Yeah.
Which is bad. I'm in a bad place mentally with the whole social media thing.
The fact that we have to doesn't make me feel good about it either.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that one of the things that I like to do is make videos, like funny videos that I think are funny.
Totally.
You know? But I think you can do it in multiple different ways. Obviously, if you're a stand-up and you're really only trying to have a social media following to promote your stand-up, then really all you have to worry about is just kind of posting more clips and trying to get big that way. So if you want to ever, you know, make so your act... Like film a special or some shit, and then just release all those as clips to promote the special. And they go over and they watch the special, and it's kind of just like, I think
I just need more stage time and to film more, really, and to write more, because that way it's like right now it's like I've basically clipped every good joke I have, but just like I think I need to keep posting it anyways on like TikTok and just not care
that people seeing it again. And post them in different locations too. Like if you do that joke in a different location and it still hits really hard, upload that too.
Different background, different outfit.
Yeah.
Faked you out.
Dude, yeah.
100%. You're right. No, you're right. You're so right. All right. Should we wrap this up?
Do we discuss all the things that we usually talk about?
Well, I have one question for everyone that is we definitely had a bunch of unique ones, okay, like cool. Dying and whirling dervish.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, what's the time where you've been stupid?
What?
Yeah. Stupid.
What?
We're on the stupid pod. We gotta talk about it.
Somewhat recently I was just on a show where at the end they had a Q&A, but I wasn't prepared for it. And there was a bunch of teachers on stage and in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It was called like the Unteachable Show, which is a really good fucking show. But they did a Q&A at the end and they were talking about paraprofessionals somehow that got brought up. And a time that I was stupid would be in that moment where I asked, I didn't know what that was. I was like, is that like when you have like two professionals?
A pair of, that's funny.
A pair of professionals. Everybody laughed, but it was very fucking dumb. I don't know what the fuck. I still don't know what it is. Yeah, I'm still.
Oh, like, you didn't Google it?
I didn't Google it. No.
Paraprofessional. Are they like paramedics, paralegal?
Possibly.
Paralympics?
Yeah. I was also like, am I hearing it wrong? Is it paraprofessional? Is it like when you're like really good at birds?
Interesting.
Like what? That
you
was
didn't get
very,
clarity. Everyone was just laughing never at got, you?
Yes.
Damn.
That's how it works.
Well, we'll Google it after.
And how do I feel when I'm in a moment like that? good.
Honestly hilarious.
If I don't know what's going on, but I'm still able to make people kind of laugh, I don't think, I think looking it up and finding out the answer ruins the vibe. Ruins it. Yeah. I have so many jokes about words I don't understand. And if I look up what those words, sometimes people will shout out from the crowd what they what it actually is. Like, shut the fuck up. Don't ruin it for me.
Yeah,
don't ruin
it. This joke is so funny
in my head, and I don't want anybody ruining this for me.
I really like your jokes where you say those things are like just Joaquin. It's like, who's gonna tell him that name is not right?
Love that.
Because it's like anyone could do that joke, but it's like, but you thought of it and you just deliver it so well. And I just think observational comedies, when you can do it well and make it yours, it's great.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
I like that a lot. I like, because that when I wrote that joke, I was like, it seems like this is a joke that would be out there.
Right?
I feel like everybody's Did you Google
Joaquin Phoenix name joke?
Yeah.
Now you own it.
Yeah, yeah. Congrats. Now it's mine. So it's good.
I love that.
I love running into jokes where it's like, I can't believe I was the first one to get to this.
I always get spooked by that too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun. All right, anything you want to plug while we're...
We have a podcast called The Boyfriends Podcast with me, Corey B, and Marcus Monroe that we comes out every Monday on YouTube. Check that out. Matt Lopes on social media, on fucking Instagram. I have really cool videos coming out. Give me a follow there.
Yo, yeah, we got to see this latest one.
Yeah. Oh, that one's used to be Maddie
Fucko. What happened to that?
I got rid of it. I always wanted to have Matt Lopes, but for the time being, until I was able to get it, it was Maddie Fucko, which I liked.
You're still Maddie Fucko in my phone.
Good, dude. I love it.
You're never going to change
it. Keep it Maddie Fucko. M-A-T-T-Y, I think, is the preferred version of my name. I feel like there's so many Matts in comedy. Oh, that's Gamefest. I saw like 13
Maddie Matts. Fucko. Maddie Maddie's Lopes. Good.
Maddie Lopes. Love that. Love all of that.
Can you put a Y in there?
Not like professionally, but all like I'll go by that nickname for sure. I love that shit.
Well, Maddie Lopes, thanks for being here.
Dude, thanks for having me on. I couldn't wait to do this stupid podcast.
Wasn't it stupid?
It was so stupid.
Hell yeah. I love it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.